what good is being a Christian? I fear that too often in sermons, against the false prosperity gospel that's so prevalent today, you hear me emphasize the harsh realities of our faith. I'm right, I'm in line with the biblical teaching when I remind you that Christianity does not make life easy. Being a Christian does not rid you of trials, hardship, or heartache. It doesn't grant you perfect health, exceptionally long life, or great riches. So who's ready to sign up? These acknowledgments, of course, do not mean that Christianity has no benefits. There are, and they are significant. Hopefully, first and foremost, we consider salvation. That we, through Christ, have right standing with God and will find favor on the day of judgment. Though our sins are great, His grace and His righteousness are greater. And the knowledge that we have been created by God to worship Him, yes, but also to rule with Him, this gives our lives purpose. Having salvation in Christ gives meaning in lives that otherwise would struggle to find any. And this salvation provides the only lasting kind of peace, that which is brought about in our very souls by the Prince of Peace. And while no other benefit matters quite so much as that, there are still many other advantages to Christianity. In a world overrun with worry and anxiety, Christianity has a transformative yet rational answer. The promise that God will supply all our needs according to His riches and glory. And we have the evidence that God keeps His promises. Christianity also has a powerful, logical answer to the problem of discouragement. That God Himself tells us He loves us and cares for us, that He will never leave nor forsake us, and that every single thing that happens is within His control and for the purpose of His glory and our becoming more like Christ. Christianity provides for joy that is not dependent on our circumstances. Of course, it's easy to have joy when everything in life is going well. But Christianity teaches us that it's the joy of the Lord that surpasses circumstances that can be our strength. It's the joy of the Lord that can give us joyful purpose in even the smallest and the most mundane of life's activities, because Christianity calls us to do all things as unto the Lord. And we can know that when we are doing those things, when we are providing that service, even that the person seems ungrateful to receive, when doing it as unto the Lord, we may find joy in it. When we get down, we would do well to remember some of these things. That even in the religion that God calls us to practice, He provides many benefits for our good and enjoyment and comfort. And the Apostle Paul knows each of those benefits well. And there's another which he emphasizes in this passage. Christian fellowship. Now verse 13 tells us that it had long been his desire to visit the people of the church in Rome. We don't know a lot about how the church in Rome started, but we know it formed at a very early date. Since we do know that the emperor of Rome made a point to expel the Jewish Christians from the city in AD 49, it means that the church was already well known and established by that early date. And what that expulsion also meant is that when the church first spread in Rome, it was likely led by some of the more than 40,000 Jewish converts there. But after expulsion, it would have been up to the Gentile converts to lead this young church. One of the early church fathers points out just how significant it was that Christianity had made inroads in Rome at all. And that's part of why Paul was so encouraged by the faith of this church. Although the Romans ruled the world, he wrote, many had submitted to the Christian faith, which seemed lowly and stupid to the wise. Rome, a metropolitan city, so proud of its learning and accomplishments. And yet the gospel had found good soil. And though Paul is encouraged by the success of the Roman church from afar, he's heard the news of it, he says he desires to be with them in person. It's the biblical concept of fellowship meant by that word you hear thrown around, koinonia. It's a closeness. It's a type of intimate friendship that exists by sharing like-minded presence. Those are the two requirements for real fellowship. It's not just a group of people. It's not just a group of people together in one place. It's a group of people together in one place, bound together because they believe the same things, or really, because they love the same things. If we love God, if we love our neighbors, and if we associate together living like people who love God and neighbor with people who love God and neighbor, we have fellowship. And that's what Paul wants to have with the group of believers in Rome. He looks forward to it. He sees a purpose in it. He says he longs for it. He knows there's great value. He will reap a harvest, not just the conversion of souls. He does talk about that. But he also says he'll reap a harvest among those who already believe. There is good for it in Paul. There is good for it for them, for both sides in their coming together. But why? And how? And for what purpose? Well, the first thing we learn about Paul's relationship to the saints in Rome speaks to the issue of why. Why is Paul confident that being with them will be a good thing? He tells us in verse 8, because he is genuinely thankful for them and for their faith. I thank my God for you, he says, because your faith is proclaimed in all the world. This thanksgiving is directed to God through Jesus Christ. Paul is thankful to God that things are the way they are. After all, God made them. God gave them faith. God equipped them for living out that faith in an impressive and appealing way to others in Rome. God, in his providence, brought news of this to Paul to provide encouragement for his own missionary endeavors. And perhaps God will be bringing them together. And so for all of this, Paul is grateful to God. And Paul's gratitude is deeply personal. Paul is doing hard work for God. And it's really encouraging to hear that this type of work is bearing fruit in Rome. It's encouraging to hear that there are others who are committed to the same hard work of the gospel. As we plant Covenant of Grace, I occasionally have conversations with folks who've been part of this type of work before, especially our friends up at Christ Covenant and some local pastors here in Atlanta. And I talk about our various struggles, or I open up about my own discouragement, and they tell me they've been here. They've seen this kind of work. They've done this kind of work, and they've seen how God has blessed the efforts. What an encouragement that is to me. And so like Paul, my gratitude to God for them is deeply personal. There's also, though, a component to Paul's gratitude that's much bigger than the personal aspect. Paul just told us he's a slave to Jesus Christ. He wants to see the kingdom of God expand. He wants to see Christ be honored and believed and loved by as many as will come to him. And as Paul hears the good news of the Roman Christians' faith, he's thankful for what they represent. God's willingness, ability, and activity to save. I'm thankful, says Paul, for your faith, which is proclaimed in all the world. I'm thankful that God gave you faith. I'm thankful that you believe. I'm thankful that your faithful witness speaks well of Christianity and of Christ. I'm thankful that the world can look at people like you and get a glimpse of the love and the truth that is of God. That's how I desire for us to think of one another. I hope we occasionally think of our own walks with Christ in these terms. I can honestly say I find myself thinking of you in these terms from time to time, not as often as I should. I'm thankful, children, that other kids around you get to see the work that God is doing in you. That as you learn to obey, as you think like Christians, as you love God and one another, I am thankful for you and that the world gets to see what a difference it makes when children love God. And when I see that in you, I am thankful for you and to God for making you who He made you to be. When you handle the things that happen in your life in a way that pleases God, you give reason for everybody in this church to be thankful. Adults in your workplaces, in your co-ops, with your kids, with the neighbors, with one another, it's encouraging. It is thankfulness producing to see you handle those things as Christians. It makes our fellowship richer because it's filled with thankfulness for one another. This is why Paul wanted to be with the Romans. He was thankful for them, and he knew what kind of fellowship you can have in that environment. When you look at the work one another is doing in our families and in our jobs and our schools and our neighborhoods and in difficult relationships and with challenges, and we see these things, especially here because we're so close to one another, and you see one another handle them, not perfectly, but like Christians, it is our delight to be thankful to God for the way He made you and for how He has equipped you to do what you're doing. St. Chrysostom called this type of faith believing with boldness, to which he added, and with boldness so great that their reputation spread throughout the world. Believing with the boldness to live like a Christian in our workplace, to live like a Christian in our families, even when it introduces conflict, healthy conflict for the sake of Christ, to live with boldness before our neighbors, to live with love and with self-sacrifice, to live with grace and forgiveness. This is believing with boldness. And Chrysostom is right. That's the kind of faith that spreads throughout the world. Taken all together, this was changing the world around the Romans. The faith that was begun in their hands was transforming the affection of their hearts and the work of their hands. Sorry, the faith that began in their heads was transforming the affection of their hearts and the work of their hands. And that had a transformative effect on the culture around them. Paul longed to be with people of whom this is true. Now, added to that, and making it possible, Paul recognized that the blessing of this kind of fellowship includes the privilege of praying for one another. He writes in verses 9 and 10, "For God is my witness, that without ceasing I mention you always in my prayers." The importance of Christians praying for one another cannot be overstated, and doing so is our great privilege. Paul knew what every minister and every missionary eventually learns. All success in ministry is fueled by the prayers of the saints. My friend and mentor, Doug Kelly, who some of you know, he taught that whenever possible, a church should have a weekly prayer meeting because it is only by the prayers of the saints that the church is able to do God's will. At Covenant of Grace, our session started a monthly prayer call where all we do is pray for you and one another, all the families in our church. Every family here has a shepherding elder that is praying for you regularly. And when the time comes that we're able, we too will have a weekly prayer meeting where we come together for the purpose of prayer because it is our privilege to do so. Please pray for one another. And as I like to remind you, tell one another that you have been praying. If I took a survey of the room, I bet I would have a hard time finding anyone truly indifferent to whether or not they're being prayed for. Paul wants to encourage the Christians in Rome by letting them know that he has been and he will continue to be praying for them. And among his prayers are that he will somehow, by God's will, be able to come and be with them. He's already told us that this is something he wanted for a long time. And it has not happened. And here he tells us that he will continue to pray for it. But humanly speaking, looking at the circumstances around him, it's clear Paul isn't actually sure how it can happen. He has no idea how it's possible that he'll end up with them in Rome. And he's already been praying this for a while, and it hasn't happened yet. And does he give up? Does he admit it's impossible? No, he continues to pray. In fact, the text says he prays without ceasing. He knows that it may not happen. He may not get what he wants, but Paul is sure of one thing. If it is going to happen, it will only be by the will of God. And so, yes, he wants to go to Rome, but more importantly, he wants to be obedient to the will of God. And praying for these people in Rome is a privilege. It's encouraging. Being able to tell them that he's praying for them is encouraging to them. And so all of this prayer, even if the answer to Paul's request to Rome is no, all of this prayer was a benefit to him and a benefit to the church in Rome. It strengthened the bonds of fellowship. When Stephen and Karen and Daphne and I were at All Saints Church in Charlotte, we were members with a woman who had been a school teacher for 25 years. And while we were there, the city closed the school where she worked. And she found herself near the end of her career, without work, and struggling to find a job. And for an entire year, she went without work. And she brought it up at the Wednesday prayer meeting and on Sundays, and we prayed for her. And I know she spent a lot of time praying for an answer. And yet, months and months passed with no work. How difficult does it become to pray when you feel as though you've prayed for something all that you can and you still have no answer? Especially when, from the human perspective, in her case, her own circumstances, the odds don't look very good. Younger teachers cost the school system less money. Most teaching positions were filled in spring and it was now summer. All kinds of circumstances shape our perspective on what probably will happen. And it becomes just another thing that tempts us not to pray, or that causes us to forget the ongoing needs of one another. But in this case, she did not stop. And our church did not forget. Our sister prayed faithfully month after month, and the church prayed for her faithfully month after month, that somehow, by God's will, in circumstances we could not see or expect, work would be provided. And to his glory, he did just that. And of course, it wasn't the type of work she would have looked for. It probably wasn't even the type of work she would have preferred. God didn't promise that. Remember, Paul did eventually make it to Rome under house arrest while he's waiting for a hearing under penalty of death. God provided work where she could use her gifts and her experience. He provided income. He provided what she needed in a way she never would have asked for or seen coming, but he did it through prayer. But that's not the point of that story. The point of me telling that story in this sermon is to ask you this. In that little church of All Saints, where we had prayed together on Sundays and Wednesdays for months and months and months and months for this need, can you imagine the rejoicing when she shared that news? Can you imagine the way that the eyes of 50 and 60 people lit up, the joy that genuinely filled our hearts that at long last God had answered our sister's prayer? It is great to have prayer answered. It is greater to be part of a community of prayer that can rejoice together when prayer is answered. Paul prays against all odds that he will be with them. If it is to happen, how will it be? By prayer. And whether it happens or not, how will they grow closer together as a community of faith? By prayer. In the church, when the question is how, most often the answer is by prayer. Paul longs to be with them. He's cultivating this close fellowship through thankfulness and prayer. He wants to see that fellowship come alive through a face-to-face encounter with them. But to what end? God builds this fellowship between Paul and the church at Rome. God enables us to build this fellowship here in the church. He gives us like-minded believers. He gives us eyes to see things in one another for which we can be thankful. He teaches us to pray. He reminds us to pray for each other. He answers the prayers of our church that we lift up to him. He brings this community together. But to what end? For what purpose? What is the point of this fellowship? Now, of course, the larger, big picture answer is for his own glory. God is glorified in the doing of these things. God shows his power, his wisdom, and his love in all of these things. We see them and we stand in awe. There is no God like him. That is very true. There's another answer to the question, though. What is the purpose of the fellowship that God gives the saints? And do you know what the answer is? It's the fellowship that God gives the saints. That is the purpose. It's hard for someone like me who always wants a project or a task. Something that can be accomplished. An outcome that can be the purpose. We get a team together because the team is going to accomplish something. But for Christian fellowship, beyond the glory of God, the greatest purpose is the fellowship. It is the community that God binds together. Paul wants to be with the Christians in Rome in person, ultimately, because he wants to be with them. Because there's great joy in being with one another. That time together is opportunity for mutual encouragement. It's time to use and benefit from the different gifts and strengths and backgrounds and personalities that comprise the beautiful diversity within the Christian church. It's encouraging and uplifting to be around people who love God and love neighbor, to learn from them when needed, yes, but often simply to enjoy their presence. To be blessed by what God has done in them and is doing. We can share our struggles. We can see how our shared faith influences the way we handle the up and downs of life. We can develop deep friendships because these are people we can ultimately trust. So Paul says in verse 12 that their time together will be encouraging each other's faith. That's a pretty ambiguous mission, isn't it? But it's the mission of the fellowship. The mission of the fellowship is fellowship. God knows that we try so hard to make islands of ourselves. Even the social butterflies who delight in a social, superficial environment retreat into themselves the moment there's doubt or discouragement or fear or confusion. We all do it. And so God calls us into this community, into this fellowship. Because encouragement and comfort come not from within ourselves, but from God. And most often, from God, mediated through the people He puts in our fellowship. Over the course of a life, we will develop friendships with people on account of many similarities. Sports interests, children of similar ages, club memberships, work, hobbies, or neighborhoods, and those are good, often our chance to be salt and light in the world and to spread the love of God in places where it's desperately needed. But here in Romans, as Paul talks about the fellowship possible between he and the Christians in Rome, we see something very important. There is no better foundation on which to build fellowship than mutual love for the gospel of Jesus Christ. From these friendships come advice we can trust, protection from gossip and infighting and backbiting, prayers we can depend on, real empathy, and self-sacrificial service. It should be the case that people who share in the bonds of faith immediately and without regard to anything else have more in common that matters than any friendship between believer and unbeliever. And so we have to prioritize these friendships because we have to prioritize this fellowship, not to the exclusion of others, unless those others exist to the exclusion of this. But it's because it is through this fellowship and no other that God promises to strengthen and encourage us for the trials and hardships of life. In Christian fellowship, you are promised similarly minded friends to share in your joys and blessings and to bear your burdens and disappointments and to love you. That does not mean friendships in the church come easily. We're all people. They're subject to the same relational challenges as any other. Remember the diversity that I mentioned. It's not that. It's just as hard or nearly as hard to be my friend if you're a Christian as if you're a non-Christian. But here's the difference. Unlike those other relationships, in this one, both parties have all the tools they need to overcome the challenges of interpersonal relationship. We can put others ahead of ourselves because of how we see Christ putting ourselves ahead of Him. We can love even those we find the most difficult to love because we can see that Christ loved the truly unlovable. We can enjoy those who are in so many ways not like us, knowing that Christ has made us all one in Him. And all of these should be more than platitudes for us. We in this room are a branch of the family of God that He has brought together. Yes, for His glory, but also just for that purpose, to bring us together. There are many benefits in the Christian life. Often not the types of benefits the world is seeking. But I promise the benefits that God knows we need the most. We see in Paul's words this morning that he considers the privilege of fellowship to be a great benefit indeed. Now, God did take Paul to Rome to taste that fellowship. By God's grace, he did not miss out. In the same way, consider how God has brought you here. The fellowship into which God has placed you. He has put every one of us in this fellowship for one another's good, and for our own good, and for His glory. So whatever we do, let's not miss out.